My first guest today is Susan Bo, Executive Director of the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government. And I hope you'll stay tuned for the second segment today, which is also by chance on a related topic, that of human rights. Kathy Kelly, co-coordinator of an organization called Voices for Creative Nonviolence, is going to talk to us about her 12 trips to Afghanistan. Welcome, Susan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So let's start out with telling our listeners what New Mexico Foundation for Open Government is and what it does.
It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has been in New Mexico for 24 years. And on a simple level, what we do is open the doors of government. We are the New Mexico equivalent of the Sunshine Law Enforcer.
Okay, so how does that work?
Well, how it works is we run a hotline, and we have many people from the press who call it, civic leaders, and also maybe half of our callers are from the public, and they often have problems getting public records, or they have problems being kicked out of public meetings, or not given a fair opportunity to speak at the meetings, or questioning why a meeting has, for example, a school board or a city council, why it's gone into an executive session. So we help them kind of work their way through that. We say we do three things. One is we educate the public and the media on sunshine laws. And second, we advocate on behalf of people who are trying to get access to public records or to public meetings, and sometimes we litigate. And I have a wonderful team of volunteer lawyers who step up and bring a lawsuit. It's pretty rare that we bring lawsuits, but we're involved in at least one or two every year.
So an ordinary person, you know, the person we call Joe Sixpack.
Right.
Joe Sixpack could call up and talk to you.
That's right.
And about a problem. Say he wants to get some public records about some contractor who got $5 million for fixing some streets in Santa Fe. And Joe Sixpack thinks something screwy about that. And he wants to see the contract. And he goes to the city and says, I want to see this contract. And somebody says, no, we don't have to show it to you. So Joe Sixpack might call you up then and say, hey, don't they have to show this to me?
That's right. And what we will tell Joe Sixpack is that he needs to file a IPRA request. And what IPRA stands for is Inspection of Public Records Act. And that's a state law. And there's a real, very simple procedure, actually, for getting a hold of these records. And you put down your name, your address, your phone number, and what you want. You don't have to say the reason that you want it. It can be for any reason. At one time, you had to specify that, but we decided as a state that that was inconsistent with open government, and you submit the request, and the public official should either turn over the record immediately or they have up to 3 days to give it to you or tell you the reason why you're not going to get it. So they're very strict deadlines.
And then the person has, they can come back to you and say, okay, they refused to give it to me, and you could take it from there.
Right.
And so the other way that you work is a reporter might be trying to get records or information or access to something from the government that he or she believes should be part of public record or public information. And so they might contact you and say, hey, help me out. Am I right about this? Is that one of the things that happens?
Yes, and usually people who are reporters or producers in the media have a really good understanding of public records, and that's often sort of the lifeblood of their stories. So they come to us when they're really kind of stuck, or maybe they just want a reality check. For example, shouldn't this be a public record? And we would give a quote, or we would make a phone call.
Uh-huh.
That would fall under the advocacy. And a recent example that we have been dealing with is trying to get lapel videos that police officers wear. You know, are those considered public records? And our position is that indeed that they are public and they should be released.
They're the equivalent of police officers' notes taken at a crime.
Exactly.
Right. So the video on their lapel video cameras or on their hat cameras or their car cameras, your contention is that that's public record too.
That's right. And where we run into resistance is that there is an exception in the public records law. And we have very few exceptions here in New Mexico. In fact, I would say that New Mexico is one of the leading states in terms of having very open records. In New Mexico, we have maybe 8 or 9 exceptions to the Public Records Act, whereas in some states, the state of Washington has 200 exceptions.
Wow.
Iowa has 50.
Wow.
And so there is one exception in New Mexico called the sort of the law enforcement exception. And it's just 2 sentences, and we read those sentences together, and we say that the only really law enforcement exceptions, be they methods or records, are those that are confidential. Uh-huh. And part of an ongoing investigation.
Yeah,
that's
as
right.
Opposed. Right. So you told me recently that you are, I don't know if you're litigating or just attempting to get further lapel videos that were taken when James Boyd was shot and killed by the Albuquerque police. That one lapel video was released, the one that was so inflammatory, but there are still others to be found, right?
That's right. And it's very interesting in that situation because the video was released within the week. And why was that particular video the one that was selected to be released? And I think I, like other members of the public, didn't realize that there was more video out there. Well, of course, once time went on, the FBI became involved. And the FBI actually asked the police department in Albuquerque to rely upon the exceptions in the Public Records Act to the full extent of the law in order to not release those documents.
The FBI asked the Albuquerque Police Department to not release the videos.
Well, within the it was
within the law.
It was worded very carefully. And so as a result, we still don't have those videos, and you know, one would wonder if it's because there was such an outcry with the one release that they don't want to, you know, make the...
That seems patently obvious.
Right,
This is not a national security issue, right?
Exactly.
There's not,
Right.
And nothing in those videos would compromise an ongoing investigation.
No, you know? Not at all.
In fact, and the public has a right to know. I mean, that's the point of FOG, right?
Right, and that is, and that's sort of our slogan, I think. It's your right to know.
Uh-huh.
We say it's your government, your money, your right to know.
Right.
And doesn't that all make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the recent cases that you've been involved in. Let's talk about the Law Enforcement Academy. Now, I guess we should make clear that a lot of the time what you guys, New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, does, besides giving advice and trying to persuade government agencies to give up public information, you also sometimes file a friend of the court or amicus briefs when another entity or person has filed a lawsuit to try to get records or information, right?
That's right.
So how did this play into this the Law Enforcement Academy controversy at all?
The Law Enforcement Academy, certainly there hasn't been any litigation about that yet. And it's a little different than our main area, which is public records and open meetings. We call open meetings OMA and public records, as I said, IPRA. But the Law Enforcement Academy came to our attention by a citizen who was real concerned because last summer the rules of the Law Enforcement Academy changed. And here in New Mexico, as well as in most states, we have statutes, and then to enforce those statutes and to get into the details, we have regulations. And under the New Mexico Administrative Procedures Act, once regulations are put into place or considered, the public needs to have input.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a public hearing. It's not an optional, like many public meetings, it's optional whether you have public comments. And so this citizen called me and said, you know, the curriculum always used to be in the regulations. And now they've taken the curriculum out of the regulations, where, again, the public has the opportunity to give input, and they're saying to the director, you come up with a curriculum, that the Law Enforcement Academy Board would do that. And then we'll approve it and we'll post it. Well, all the publicity that occurred in the wake of that just said, they're shortening the curriculum, and not the fact that basically the curriculum making process was becoming secret.
Uh-huh.
And the reason we care about that as a public is, how are we training our officers? What are they learning about, you know, when to draw their gun? What are assumptions are they operating under? And the Santa Fe New Mexican in particular did a wonderful story and looked at the new curriculum, and the curriculum said that when you approach a car, assume that the occupant has a gun inside. Well, that's a lot different mentality than approaching a car when you just believe this is a citizen that was maybe driving too fast.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here. A lot of the time, there are two really dangerous circumstances for police officers, a domestic call, right?
That's right.
And those times when there is a bad guy or a bad person in a car and the police officer approaches the car. I think it's a matter of the way they're wording these things. There's a difference between approach a car with all appropriate caution, you know.
Yes.
And approach a car assuming there's a gun inside.
And I don't mean to undermine the wonderful job that our law enforcement officers do. And it's a really tough job, and they are putting their life at risk. But is it necessary, for example, that a car that was stopped for speeding or going through a red light or driving maybe somewhat erratically, is it necessary to shoot at the car? Now, having said that, we're not in the position at all of saying what the curriculum should be. We are not experts at this, and we defer to the experts, but we also defer to the importance of having public input.
Right.
Let's have a dialogue about it.
You're not trying to tell them what to put in the curriculum.
No,
you're telling
not at
them
all.
That they need to allow the public to have
right.
a say.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah,
right.
How things are put together.
Exactly.
You also told, we talked about a very interesting case about the elephant. You call it the elephant mask case?
Yes. And although we're not the ACLU, we do get into First Amendment issues. And our position is that you can't exercise your First Amendment rights unless you know what the government is doing. And so occasionally the issues that we run into have First Amendment implications. Now, this was not a case that we were involved in, but down in Albuquerque, there was a former employee in the Albuquerque School District who either was fired or quit and decided that he wanted to show up at all meetings and push his particular agenda. And this went on for actually quite a few years. And at one of the meetings, he wore an elephant mask. And he was asked to remove the mask by the board, and he refused to do so, and so was subsequently kicked out of the meeting. And the Albuquerque school district then said, "You're no longer welcome at our public meetings." Mm. Well, this particular individual then went to federal court in Albuquerque and said, "Please give me an injunction to prevent the enforcement of this particular letter." And there was a decision that came down about 2 weeks ago by the chief judge in Albuquerque that said, this is a First Amendment issue. Once you create what's called a limited public forum and you invite the public to come in and speak, then you're going to have to take your shots. That may include criticism. It may include things that you don't want to hear. And it may include also wearing an elephant mask. And that's a form of speech. It's symbolic speech, mm-hmm. and the elephant mask represented the elephant in the room.
To him, yes.
Right, mm-hmm. that the board was not willing to acknowledge that there was a problem. Mm-hmm. And so now, I guess we have a right to wear elephant masks to public meetings, may be the outcome of that.
I think I'd rather wear Richard Nixon mask.
Yeah, I think so,
myself.
Too.
So I'm talking with Susan Bowe, the executive director of the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, which, what's your little phrase you say, Susan? Educates, advocates,
and litigates. That's
for,
right.
For the public to have access to government records and meetings and all that the law allows and affords us to have. Tell us about your involvement in the situation with Governor Susana Martinez in terms of getting her calendars and copies of her expense reports with travel and stuff.
Well, we personally are not involved in any lawsuits against the governor at this time, but there are two media groups, the Associated Press as well as the Santa Fe Reporter here in town, who are trying to obtain access to those records, and they have filed lawsuits against her. And less than a month ago, her attorneys, as part of the defense, said that they do not believe that the Inspection of Public Records Act applies to her because of separation of powers, and they're even questioning the constitutionality of using IPRA to obtain those records. And we have, again, we have not been intimately involved in this at all, although we did at one time, this was prior to my tenure at the organization, sit down and meet with the governor and her staff, and she was willing to release some of her additional records. And their reason is based upon, security issues. But I think the reason that the public is, quite concerned is that, Governor Martinez is becoming a national figure. And we're just curious about where she's going and is it costing, the taxpayer any money in that regard.
And she's spending our money when she's traveling.
That's right.
That's a good argument to say, yeah. And what are we paying for?
Right, so. Exactly. And, the whole premise of our organization, people may say, well, boy, this is kind of a snoozer, and why should I care? Hmm. And the reason that you should care is that the sign of a democracy is openness and access to information. And in closed totalitarian countries, that information just is not available. It gets shut down. And so somebody has to be out there, always reminding government that, hey, you're accountable. Mm-hmm. This process needs to be transparent.
And you've done... And you do a lot of work that is actually very informal. You mentioned making phone calls and things like that. Is that very effective?
It's hard to know, but I'll just give an example. I do public speaking. I was in Grants last week and talked to the newspaper staff there. Tomorrow I'm going to meet with a group of Iraqi government officials who are here to learn about transparency. But in terms of the effectiveness, I think about my first session, which was just this year, over at the legislature. And even though we're a tiny little organization with a tiny little budget, everybody knew us, lobbyists and legislators, and it was like the conscience of transparency is walking through the halls. And I approached one legislator, I'm just starting to get acquainted, and introduced myself, and the immediate words out of his mouth were, well, what did I do wrong? And I said, well, as far as I know, I don't think anything.
Ah.
But again, we do have a pretty high profile for being a small organization.
Someone is watching. That's how
exactly.
They feel. And people who are very conscious of their public impression they're getting are more likely to watch themselves.
Exactly.
If they know someone's watching.
Another time I was walking through the halls over there and... someone said, hey, there are a bunch of secret meetings that are going on.
Oh.
And sometimes it's too much information. Now, in terms of lobbying, we don't do very much. Mm-hmm. Like this session, we really didn't have any issues. But we want to keep those public records and the Open Meetings Act strong. Mm-hmm. And often there is an attempt to whittle away at that. And let's put in another exception. And I know there's some proposals that'll be coming up in the next session. And so we're usually in a defense posture.
Uh-huh. You told me the other day that technology, instead of making records easier to get, sometimes is making it more difficult. Will you explain that?
Sure. In the old days, and you were a newspaper reporter, often if you were looking for particular records, the public official or the clerk would say, come on in and look through these files. And so you'd be in this dusty little room and looking through all this information. But now with technology, much of that information is on a computer. And there's a reluctance to allow the public or the media to sit down and have access to the computer. And I can appreciate that. And so what happens is when you ask for a particular record, for example, give me the police incident reports from the last 2 days, there is a little bit of information in there that would be considered confidential. So what happens is that the public entity will print off those records and then let you look at them, or worse yet, will charge you before you look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really almost prohibitively expensive for a newspaper. And we're involved in a situation right now, not in Santa Fe, but in another community here, where that's a real problem, has been a real problem for the newspaper, and try to get the information in a timely manner and waiting for it to be printed off for some official to look at it and to redact. There's a very limited amount of confidential information that can be taken out. Social security numbers.
Someone's accused of a crime and their social security number appears in the document, they deserve to have that protected.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's how technology, we're trying to make our way through that. And we're having actually a conference call tomorrow with the city attorney and the county attorney in this community I mentioned, as well as with the one of the assistant attorney generals. And we often work with the attorney general in the state because the attorney general is charged with the enforcement of Open Meetings Act as well as the Public Records Act. But there can be individual suits, and sometimes those, you know, will bring results more quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you win, you get attorney's fees.
Yes. So,
so that's a little bit of incentive, yeah.
I've been talking with Susan Bowe. She's the executive director of the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government. Their website is nmfog.org. You can find out more about them. Thank you, Susan, for being with me. We're going to take a break. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.